Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about something like about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marches never changed anything.
Oh,
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This, God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. And he messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him, and then you felt like you wasn't worthy, and so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room, and I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me, and I said, I want you to do this graph for me, and that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on not meant to be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad chap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he...
Before I get started with this video, I just want to personally thank the brother Fred Hassan Powell of the Morale Facebook page for sharing this social political cartoon, which is currently displayed in this video. I always big up brothers who are artists like him, my man Will James, Alex K. Art, Chris Miller, and others, because their pictures speak volumes. They don't have to say one word, because as they say, a picture is worth 1,000 words. In fact, I want y'all to take a good look at this picture, which shows a brother with his hat flipped to the back telling the bald-headed brother that he's hungry as fuck. When the brother attempts to hand him his own fishing rod so he can get some fish on his own, he gets verbally assaulted. No, nigga, I want some fish. Fuck out of here with that coon shit. Man, if you look closer, you'll see that the brother that says he's hungry got a fresh pair of Jordans on his feet. And once again, I want to thank you, Fred, for sharing that photo, because it is a perfect warm-up for what I'm getting ready to bring up next. Look, last week, I had to stop past a gas station, and when I went in, I took a quick glance over to the newsstand and I saw the Washington Post. The first thing that caught my eye was something that you normally don't see on the cover of a newspaper, which was a few straggling pants sagging brothers sitting on a stoop of a building outside. I didn't have the time to read the paper in the gas station because I had to fly, but I checked the article online when I got home and I was just flabbergasted. I want you all to check it out for yourself in the description box. It is the December 9th edition of the Washington Post, And the front cover story is a look back at the riots which took place in Baltimore this past April following the death of Freddie Gray. The Post took the time to interview a few of the residents and get their personal take on how things have been and has any positive change come to the streets of Baltimore after the riots. And one of the brothers that they interviewed was a young man that was out there on the streets peddling drugs from time to time, and he stated that he ended up finding out shortly after the riots that there were a few storefront apartments that were up for sale and that they were only selling for just $5,000 apiece. He then said that when he ran the idea of getting together and investing in the neighborhood past several brothers that he was out there selling drugs with on the streets, all of them told him no. And see, this goes to what brothers like myself, Sean James, and many others who are right here on YouTube have been telling y'all about this modern Negro. Okay, this Baltimore brother that was interviewed by the Washington Post had a great idea and the right frame of mind to purchase this storefront property while the price is extremely low. But the rest of the Negroes that are around him ended up dragging him into the quagmire of apathy that surrounds the Negro landscape.
She a dude. She just hit you in your face. She a dude. That bitch scared, nigga. Oh. Beat her motherfucking ass. She drug you, motherfucking nigga. Beat her motherfucking ass.
That nigga can't see her.
Fuckin' himself. You from New State.
It's over. Everybody get the fuck out of here.
Man, fuck it. Let's go across the street.
I ain't caught it. I'll slap the fuck out of one of y'all. Real quick. Just like this. What a job.
Look, the main spot that this brother was looking to purchase had five rooms between both of the upstairs levels, and it just needed a little bit of furnishing. These spots could have easily been rented out to tenants or used as cheap housing by family and friends that could have worked a legitimate business out of that storefront. The Negroes just don't get it, because the more legitimate storefronts, strip mall shops, apartments and tenements you own would lessen the police targeting you, because then you could do what the foreigners and white folks that own these places do, which is hire the police to work security at your properties and places of business. Why do you think they don't go upside the heads of these foreigners? Because they step to the police officers and let them know that they have work for them. These foreigners and white folks that own and run these storefronts hire the cops, and if they don't pay them with cash, they give them free merchandise and meals on the house, so they in turn look out for them. And half these cops do moonlighting security at these places even when they are on duty, because all they got to do most of the time is just drive through with a squad car or do a quick foot patrol right near the business or apartment housing units that are being rented out. This is why they don't give the Chan family or any Chinese youngster any problems when they see them in the hood by their dry cleaners. This is why they don't bother Mr. or Mrs. Akbar or any Arab kids that they see near the gas stations they own. This is why they don't mess with Miss Yee or any of her grandkids that are close to the nail salon she owns, because they take a small percentage of the proceeds and pad the local policeman's pockets. And see, your typical foolish Negro that would challenge what I just told you will say, well, see, you insinuating that we got to bribe the police for them to stop brutalizing us. But they, like most, don't know anything about capitalism. It is a game of economic musical chairs. I just gave you the analogy when I mentioned all the foreign families that own all the storefronts, strip malls, and rental properties. Who is the only one who is left standing up with no businesses or property to speak of when the music is done playing and the cops roll through the neighborhood? That's us, yapping back and forth when the music stops and they tell our loitering asses to get moving or catch a bruising. That's us, walking around with sagging pants and glow-in-the-dark fluorescent color wigs like this sister that you see right here tossing rocks during the riot last April. Now, she's throwing rocks and expressing her anger and frustration, but she has a fresh weave on top of her head, which helped pay some of the officers that broke Freddie Gray's back. So who is the sellout and coon, black folks? And think about it. If you own some of those storefronts and control the flow of unlaundered, legitimate-made currency that comes through those areas, you can do your illegal dirt all day long without that much harassment from the local authorities. You might draw attention from a few alphabet gang organizations like the DEA, FBI, and others, but the local guys aren't going to pay that much attention because you're helping them pay bills and you're putting food in their stomach. And since I brought up the subject of illegal activity and you pants-sagging clowns love to talk about how gangster you are, why don't you do what some of the Irish, Italian, Jewish, and Polish immigrants your dumbass keeps trying to emulate did by legitimizing some of your hustles and using the same police force that chases you around the neighborhood as a shield? See, most Negroes will try to tell you that we are always at the end of a nightstick, a baton, or getting showered with bullets just because we are black. But ask yourself a question. Why aren't that many Ethiopians and West Africans getting mollywopped and punished to the extent that many so-called African Americans are in the U.S.? Remember, they're just as black and sometimes way darker than us. But why are there fewer cases of them being brutalized and killed by the police like we saw with Amadou Diallo or Abner Louima, both of which took place in New York? Why so few cases compared to us so-called Afro-Americans? It's because they're smart enough to own businesses, restaurants, furniture stores, parking lots, etc., and pay the cops to look the other way so their fellow countrymen aren't harmed in any way. That's the logical thing to do. But you can't tell this Negro from America that, because you're still living off the backwards principle and creed of entitlement, which these liberals drafted up for us long ago. Instead of assessing this situation from a global perspective and seeing that everyone else seems to be purchasing everything around us so they can live comfortable lives and keep us at a position of marginalization as opposed to putting themselves in that boat, the Negro man and woman in the U.S. will counter it by saying, see, I object because my tax dollars pay for the police not to harass me. No, they don't, you imbecile. Especially after Uncle Sam rapes their paycheck just like he rapes everybody else's. Now, your pro-whack movement pseudo-black nationalist leaders will call me a coon for telling you this, but this is something that they know firsthand. They also know that you more than likely won't view this phenomenon from all angles because you're still under the influence of the can't we all just get along flavored Kool-Aid most black folks drank after the post-civil rights movement era, thinking that all the bigotry-enhanced physical assaults and beatdowns we took during chattel slavery and Jim Crow had an exclusive cutoff date to them, which is why every single year one of these highly publicized police brutality incidents takes place, there's some dumb Negro that says, I don't believe that in 2087 this is still happening to black people. Yeah, it is. And it's going to keep on happening in 2088 if you don't adopt a different way of thinking, dummy. Your pseudo-black nationalists won't tell you that you are mostly to blame for this continually happening because they want you to keep feeling sorry for yourself and attend more lectures and debates where they argue over whether or not a woman is God or which master teacher's philosophy is better to follow. But I'm here to tell you right now, black folks, that we don't need to attend a gazillion seminars, travel with a million other jugheads to commemorate the anniversary of a march that never led to mass black improvement, or study the teachings of some philosophical doctor with 10 degrees to find a solution to our problem. This brilliant brother from Baltimore that was interviewed in the December 9th edition of the Washington Post, who more than likely didn't even finish high school, just gave us the answer. And if you're wondering why I titled this thing Ballin' on Baltic Avenue, I did so as a way of saluting one of my grandfathers. See, long ago when I was a very little boy, he taught me how to play Monopoly. I was about 7 years old, and I was all geeked up racing around the board to buy Boardwalk and Park Place. And he said, go right on ahead. He let me do it and said, I'll just buy a Baltic, Mediterranean, Oriental, and all these other properties that you aren't even thinking about. So as the game went on, and I only owned Boardwalk, Park Place, and Pacific, I think, he had all the other properties, the railroads, the waterworks, the electric company, and a whole bunch of hotels and houses on all of them while I was looking silly. And I ended up having to sell what I owned and wait for that $200 paycheck once I passed go. Once it finally set in that I lost the game, he chuckled and told me, son, you got to own what's in the ghetto before you walk around the block. And that lesson that my grandfather Dave, rest his soul, taught me still applies to this very day. Ownership is a universal language, no matter what culture or ethnicity you come from, because it regulates the sort of relationship you're going to have with most of the people around you.
All right, time for another installment of It's My House. And, you know, as I was listening to that last audio titled Balling on Baltic, which is based on the Monopoly board game, I was also thinking about the Robert Kiyosaki's game, board game, called Cash Flow. And I was thinking about those games, those board games, because they both teach financial literacy. I was thinking about those in the context of our topic today, which is Amish Economics 2021, Amish Economics 2021. We have a special guest on, Albert Lee, who's been on here before to speak about Amish Economics, but it'll be interesting if we can put together a board game, working title, Amish Economics. Just imagine a Monopoly game, but it's based on Amish economic principles, which is a good way to learn financial literacy. In any event, and then transfer that, because the whole idea of the board game Monopoly and cash flow is to take, particularly the cash flow board game, Kiyosaki talks about essentially, all right, you learn from your mistakes in a sanitized, non-punitive board game, such as the cash flow board game, and then take and then transfer that into real life. And then with the Monopoly board game, it really comes down to the two least expensive lots to buy in a Monopoly board game are Baltic Avenue and Mediterranean, the two purple properties. Those are the least expensive properties. Some people call those the ghetto properties in a Monopoly board game. But, and you just put little greenhouses on them. If you got like four greenhouses on them, then you can upgrade to a hotel or motel. Isn't that a hotel in that game? But you can actually do that in real life. Now, the Amish, I believe, has all that beat. But anyway, more on Amish, putting a board game together based on Amish economics. Anyway, let's go to our guest. Good morning, Albert Lee.
Good morning. Good morning. Glad to talk to you this morning.
Great.
How's the group up there?
Hadn't been out. It's been over a year. But Albert, first tell us who Albert Lee is. Let's start off that way for people who are not familiar with you.
Okay. My name is Albert Lee, like Lee's telling you, and I actually have lived most of the experiences that I'm going to talk about. And the whole thing is you got to have a mindset. I was listening to Lee's tape there earlier, and he had some good points there. But you have to study that and live that. I have been there and done that, and I started in West Fresno. It's a poor part of Fresno, city of Fresno. And I went to a country school, maybe 200 or 300 people that was there. But I always wanted to know, how was those people driving those expensive Lamborghinis and stuff like that? I mean, farmers was driving those kind of cars. And I have always been different as far as learning and checking out things.
Oh, Albert, that's a concept. I haven't seen that one yet. Farmers driving Lamborghinis.
Yes. And so I always was curious about that. And I was just in high school at the time, you know. But then again, where I lived in West Fresno, it was a corner. And it was a corner full of, I'd say, transients, people that had opportunities that did not fulfill them. They did not follow their dreams. And I would just actually, in essence, I call it interviewing, which is going on now, as far as podcasting and all this. I was doing it before it even evolved, and I didn't know this. But I always asked these people, what were their downfall? What caused them to fall under the radar? I'll say it that way. And they would tell me most of these people had degrees, college degrees, but they were failures as far as the real life.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought about that. I said, you know, I got to turn this thing around. I said, because, you know, I'm growing up in a poverty area. Somebody's got to look over the cuckoo's nest. That's what I call that. I flew over the cuckoo's nest. And I've had my share of problems, believe it or not, but I don't call them failures. I call them learning experiences. So when I was in high school, I almost flunked out, because I was not interested in economics and money. But I love to run the streets and see what I can get into as far as running women. So I went on, and then I got married in 1970. I've been around a long time. See, I got married in 1970. I was going to City College. I didn't flunk out of high school. I flunked out of junior, JC. And the point is, I was going there, and something come to me and says, you know, I was raised poor. I know what poor means. I don't have to explore that. That's a self-evident situation. So it was hard for me to get a mindset. That's what I call it, to say I'm gonna go forward. I'm gonna kick this thing. I'm gonna put some points in my life that will live forever. That was my goal. And so I went and graduated. I flunked out of City College because I didn't take it serious. I had to stay out of college for 1 year because I couldn't go back after you flunk out. And I worked at a trucking company from four in the evening to 12 at night. And one thing stuck with me. It's this guy that was working there. He was in his 60s or 70s at the time. And he told me, he said, Lee, you need to go back to school. You can't. This is no future for you. And, you know, I was always type of person. I listen to when people tell me things. Mm-hmm. And I believe in weighing those things, Lee, because it is some important information that people tell you. And if you're listening, you got to be ready for it. I call it ready for it, okay? And so I thought about it, and I said, I'm going back to school, finished my college degree at City College. So I went back. And it took me 1 year. I got a AA in arts, associate arts degree. Then I got a degree in real estate, a certificate in real estate, all with basically A averages. And so don't tell me you can't change your life around. And from there, I went to the four-year university here in Fresno, California State University, Fresno.
Mm-hmm.
And I graduated in 2 years there because I was serious. I had responsibilities I had to take over, and I was never going to keep working all of my life on a hand-me-down job. I wasn't going to do that because I knew it was no future in working on a job that has no ending to it. Like the guy told me that was at the trucking company. All he ever going to get, if he gets that, is a gold watch and a broken back. And I remembered that. And I said, I'm going to finish college at Fresno State. I was the first one in my family that graduated from a four-year college. And I was married during this period of time. I was married. But then again, my wife looked after me. She believed in me. She believed in me, too. And my grandfather believed in me as I go back there to think about it. He used to tell me, boy, you're going to do something great one day. You're going to do something great. Because I was always curious about certain things. And what I tell people now, I majored in money. That's what I majored in. Because
okay.
we live in money, Lee. We live in money. And the whole thing is you got to learn how to manage that money. And that's the next step. I started a landscaping business when I got out of college, the four-year college. I don't call it failure. It didn't work, okay? I had to change different things to make sure that eventually it will work.
Mm-hmm.
But what I did, I started that, and I decided I'm not going to stay in this landscaping. That's hard work, you know? That's hard work. And so what I did, I went and got a job with Hartford Insurance here out of Fresno, Hartford Insurance, as a claims adjuster. And that's what got me open to real estate because I would go around and evaluate people's losses in their homes or jewelry or whatever. And it came to me, something said, you know, you can do this for Hartford. How come you can't do it for yourself? And I got to thinking about that, so I quit Hartford. I actually quit Hartford working there to go into another business, and that was my appraisal business. I had never seen a black person doing appraisals in my city. It was not there. And I was the first one in my city that done actually real estate appraisals. And I've done that work for 38 to 40 years, doing nothing but that. I never had a problem collecting my money because I was street smart. Because you got to remember, I grew up in West Fresno, a poverty area where everyone is categorized to fail. I mean, categorized to fail. And so I had that sense, that sixth sense when it comes to that. And then from that point, after the Hartford Insurance, me going into appraisals, the appraisal business showed me where the money was truly made. And the money was truly made in real estate. You show me a millionaire or a person that's wealthy or a billionaire, it all enhanced on property, real estate. I was so infatuated with that area. I went on a binge for 4 years, 5 years. I bought all kind of properties, every part of Fresno, lower class areas, middle class areas, and higher class areas. And I learned that you can become wealthy just in owning properties. And nowadays, I think it's even easier now. You don't have to own as many because the values is higher at the time. And so I made over $2 million in that. I bought that much in properties. And the problem that
now,
I learned,
Albert, the real estate boom in California, at least one of the early, like during the Ronald Reagan era, were you in that? Were you buying properties in?
Yeah, well, yeah, I came in doing right after it was. It was there, like you said, it was there already, but I came
right.
in between. And that's what created the investors that we were at that time as far as creative financing, because it had you couldn't buy real estate on a regular basis because you were going to overpay for it. So
right.
it created, in essence, Lee, it created geniuses out of nothing. That's what it was. And that's why you hear about the books Nothing Down by Robert Allen and all those. That was a thing at the time. But see, this is what I'm getting ready to say. The times has changed. It's not the same anymore. And if you don't get on the new revenue making in real estate or in your life, you're going to fail. And to me, failing is when you stop trying. There's no such thing as outright failing trying. It's when you don't try. That's when you fail. And so I talked to you about a year or two about this, Lee, as I recall, about the Amish economics.
Right.
And so when I retired, I get back to what I was doing. When I was 30 years old, I was a millionaire twice over, just in real estate. My goal before I was 30 was to buy all I can buy in real estate and let it appreciate. That was a different time then. So I wrote a book about this, what I'm talking about, called How to Make Money 24 Hours a Day. And I was way ahead of my time at that time because I was the only black that I know of that was doing that type of publications and speaking engagements all over the United States at the time. And so I felt if they can do it, I can do it. Trust me, that never failed me either. And I would like to see the people, your audience out there, Lee, they got to have the same mindset, okay? Like when I talk to you or talk to anyone about these subjects, I'm not just going on no book terminology. I'm going on experience, actually being out there on the battlefield. I mean, coming up from dead, you know what I mean? Back to, from dead.
Mm-hmm.
I've been there. And so the whole thing is I have people I talk to about this, and it's so simple what I'm saying. People think it's not true, but it is. It is true. And the whole thing is you need to read my first book, How to Make Money 24 Hours a Day, and you can understand that. But after that happened, me going into debt, buying all this real estate, going belly up 3 years later, I had over $1 million in loans out there that I had bought in real estate. And what I learned over the years is not buying the property, it's how you buy it. And it interests me to find out it's got to be another way to own property without mortgages. And that's what I found and researched about Amish economics. It's a way, it's a partnership way in the group of the Amish to own properties and keep it in the family forever until they want to, whatever they want to do with it. What blacks are not taught this. We as blacks are not taught this. You and I, Lee, was talking about this 2 years ago, maybe even somewhere around there. But they don't want you knowing all this because it cuts down their product, their producing of what they are doing. That's what it cuts down on. Whatever you want to say there. But I learned that you have to buck the odds. In order to win in life, you got to go opposite from what you see in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been tagged in life to be this way. Believe me, though, I have done things that most people will never be able to do in their lives because of my aggression of I'm going to try. And I have done pretty well everything you can think of in real estate. You know that, Lee, from the past.
Right.
And so I feel that I have something to offer the other side of the people that your audience is listening, whoever's out there. But look at me. I mean, I've had people tell me, man, I didn't have the opportunity you had. It's no such thing as the opportunities. You take your opportunities. You make them, okay? And that's taking risk, constantly decent risk. And as I've gotten older, I realize I'm tired of taking risks now. I'm going to take risk on other people's money. Or they take risk off of my money. And that's where the Amish economics come in. You're debt-free, okay? I used to drive expensive cars, Range Rovers, Mercedes-Benz. I've driven all kind of expensive cars. But the bottom line, what it came to, I didn't own them, okay? I didn't own them. And so it would show me that one year when I along the way of my journey, I had a Range Rover, paying high payments on a Range Rover. And I couldn't afford it when the market changed during that period of time. So I had to call the dealership and tell them to come pick the car up. Could you do that? And and they looked at me, and they said, man, nobody's never called and told us to pick up a car. I said, well, man, it's reality. You know what I mean? I'm not going to have you chasing me when I know I can't afford it. And that started changing my life for staying debt-free. Get out of debt, live out of debt, cut your expenses down to what you can cut them down to, you'll be surprised. You people don't believe, if you don't believe what I'm saying, try it, okay? And I know it's hard to do. Trust me, I know it is. It's hard to do, but you got to use self-discipline. That's just like when you were born as a baby, we all were. You didn't know right from wrong because you wasn't taught that, right?
Right.
Now, think about that, Lee, in the economics, okay? Think about the difference there. You didn't know. We don't know the difference. Didn't know. We just lived what we saw our parents do, stay in debt, okay? That's the way it was. But it has to change. The new generation is fast-tracked, but I'm predicting if they don't slow down in the financial part of it, it's going to be a catastrophe. Trust me, it will be. You got to live simple. And that's what I watched my grandfather do when I was growing up. I didn't realize that then. But they didn't believe in debt then. But the debt came into the being in the 1970s, 80s, it started spiraling. They wouldn't keep. Okay, now think about what I just said. Look how many years the mind have been conditioned to stay in a negative situation. Think about it. You know, and it's going to take us time to get out of that mindset, too. But you got to start somewhere. In the next 10 or 15 years, I'm predicting, we're going to have a fallout fallout crisis in debt, financial. That's what the warning was last year with the virus.
Yeah, the pandemic.
That's right. It's telling us we got to shake down the debt. It's not that we need a job. We need a mindset. That's what we need. If you had a mindset in these times we've been going through and still going through to a point, you wouldn't worry about no jobs or financial. I know it's easy to say it, you think, than done, but I've been there. I've done that. Okay, whatever I'm saying on this, and the point is I have all kind of people that comes to me right now and want to know what do I think about certain things. And so I'm getting ready to start a, a podcast show or a Zoom show on what we're talking about today. But, you know, don't look at your color because you're black. You're underprivileged. That's what the mindset is. It's keeping you in prison, a self-inflicted prison with those thoughts. You can do anything you want to do.
Now, Elvis, you mentioned simplicity. Give us some examples of Amish economics.
Oh, that's a good question. For one thing, is living simple mean, do I need that expensive car I'm driving? That's the number one thing that most of us as black people carried away with. New rides, I call it. New rides, and 1 year off the showroom floor, they're old. So You need to cut back on that. I mean, you can drive a nice car, but do it have to be an expensive car? And the car that you drive should be paid for. I know it sounds strange, but it should be paid for.
Well, the Amish and a good portion of the Mennonite community, well, let's say at least Amish and some Mennonites, they don't take on cars because, they have their buggies or whatever, because essentially they don't want to deal with that bank loan.
There you go. It's a curse. It's a curse.
Right.
Okay, then the housing. That's another area. The housing
market, they build their own houses.
There you go. Why? Why do you think they do that?
Zero mortgage.
That's right. That's zero stress on living. But most of us, we know and we feel that we got to have a mortgage. This is what I think. This is my suggestion on that. You can start off with a mortgage when you first buy a house. 20 or 30 years later, that mortgage should be paid for, or even sooner. It shouldn't linger around your neck like a hanging situation.
Well, what a lot of people do is they get that mortgage, and then somewhere down the line, they refinance it.
Yes, and that's a curse.
And they stay in debt. Whereas with the Amish and many Mennonites, what they do is they get together and build houses.
Yes.
Which particularly
the
their children,
right,
when
they're
starting off and getting married, they get together and they build those homes, so they're starting off with zero mortgage.
Right. That's the bank right there. The Amish is their own created bank within their system. Okay.
You know, I never thought about it. Their community is a de facto bank.
Yes, automatically. When you say Amish, you know, first thing a person think, wow, they're thrifty people, or they living off of watching TVs. They don't watch TVs, or they don't drive new cars. But who has, in the bottom line, who has the most smart when it comes to that? Okay, they do. Because most of us, and this is a fact here too, we end up putting ourselves in a position, Lee. We don't live our expectancy of life because of the stress, the worrying of paying bills, the worry of getting enough food to eat for our children or for us individually. That's another area, food. You know, is that strange for me to tell you, the audience, that you need to grow your own garden if you have to? And if you do need to buy something at the store, keep it simple. You don't have to buy expensive steaks and all this, because in the bottom line is those steaks going to kill us. Heart attacks, cholesterol, and all that. So when you look at what you think buying good is really bad for you. And, you know, the whole thing is it takes a village to raise a family. A child, too, if you want to say it that way. That's what Hillary Clinton said years ago. Okay, but people didn't recognize that, Lee. They didn't really put that in perspective. If I'm going to be strong, we have to work together. And most blacks, I mean, seriously, they don't really stick together like they should. I mean, you know, it's a deal of trying to fight the other person to try to get more than nothing person out of life. end up with nothing but a death trap. That's what you end up with. If I can help you, you can help somebody else. That's the way you have to look at it. It's networking within the black family. We don't have that. I haven't seen that since I've been on this planet, in this world. I haven't seen that. It's all about me. And if we learn to stick together and live like the Amish and think like the Amish to a point, we'd be better off. And the whole thing is, I know that we feel that the government owes us. Yeah, they might owe you, but they can't keep taking care of you. Think about that, okay? And the whole thing, if they do, you're going to be stymied with welfare or whatever. You know, I always say, just give me a hand to get started. I'll kick the door down. That's the attitude you got to have. Because if it's up to me, it's up to me, okay? And that's what you got to look at within your own self. And the Amish lives everything they do, Lee. It's all strategized. You thought about that? What I mean by that is, go ahead.
You're right about that, because I'm thinking about it, and I need to put a map up of the where they live too. Part of that strategy is of Amish economics is, I would say, you can't put the cart before the buggy or the Rolls Royce or the Lamborghini. In no particular order, one common denominator of the Amish and a good number of Mennonites is they live in rural areas.
Yes. Why?
That's number one. And in rural areas, there's typically less people and less government regulation. You know, for starting businesses
and land to grow food on.
Right, land to grow food on, and have businesses. I mean,
yes.
I think in the scrolling marquee here on Blog Talk Radio, we got, and they have businesses that, a lot of those businesses they have low regulation,
yes.
Like selling quilts.
There you go.
Farmers markets, making furniture.
Yes. And that, stop right there for a minute, Lee.
Mm-hmm.
That making furniture has come into the United States now. Have you noticed that? It's furniture stores selling Amish furniture right now. I've seen that right here in the city I live in.
Okay.
It's all about Amish. Go ahead on. Finish what you were saying.
Sheds, tool sheds. They make a lot of those and sell them at flea markets or farmer markets, I've noticed, at least down here in Florida where I'm at right now.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of businesses that they're into are basically, they're not complicated. Open a restaurant, selling pies, farmer markets, you know, growing stuff and selling it at the farmer's market. Like I said, mm-hmm. building sheds and selling those, the furniture. But like I say, they do borrow money, but many of them don't borrow it from banks. They have a family bank.
Yes.
And they borrow from within the family.
Have you noticed that become popular too in the United States? Have you noticed that? When you see ads in the paper or you see ads selling books and stuff, they'll say how to be your own self-bank. Well, that's what they're talking about.
Mm.
Keep it out of the public, but keep it within the family. But
right.
that's where the stick together come in, Lee, right there. You can't be envious of another neighbor that got money there like you do. You got to keep working to put it together to make more money. Make it grow for the future generation. How many people think that? Trust me. How many people really think that?
According to Wikipedia, there's about 270,000 Amish. That's the Amish population, give or take, in the United States. It is growing, and they say what percentage of the population Let's see, 19% of the Amish in America live in Indiana.
That's right.
Rural
That's
right. Indiana at that. But you've got them in, I know I've run into Pennsylvania,
Kansas.
Ohio.
Kansas.
Oh, Kansas,
big.
Okay.
Yes, I've learned from a lot. My wife, folks used to live back there in mm-hmm. that Hutchinson, Kansas, in Wichita area. And that's why I was saying I would go. I'd stop in there.
Now,
are
they in the rural? Because I've been to Wichita, Kansas,
yeah,
a few times,
always,
but it's in the urban, the city
always.
Part. So you're talking about they're in the rural areas.
Yes, always. That's where they set up shop because
mm-hmm.
what they do. They set up close to freeway or highway, where
mm-hmm.
traffic always coming through their shops. And where I was at in Wichita, they would have butchery shops. They would raise their own pigs and whatever, and then they would butcher them in their shops. And that's fresh meat when you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I would go by there, stop in there, and I would look at check out their shop, things they're selling. Everything to me that they usually sell is self contained. Like they have pot cleaners from cleaning utilities, kitchen utilities. They have pot cleaners that they make out of with their hands, which I have time right now at home. But they make out of their hands. They don't use that other cleaning what the United States or people in the States use. They make their own stuff. And then when you look at a shirt or you look at a jacket, they made that. They didn't order that from another region.
Well, you know, they make their own clothes.
Yeah,
you have to give
I've seen that. I experienced that, okay? And it fascinated me so much. That's been 10 or 15 years ago that I noticed this. I said, I got to change. It may have even been longer than that, maybe. I said, I got to change my way of living. Because you can, like anything, you think about this, what I'm saying, Lee. We can all make a lot of money in our lifetime. The bottom line is, what did we do with it? Okay? We can talk all day long about what I did 20, 30 years ago. What did I do with it? What was my experience of going this route? And it's always some shakedowns and some setbacks, but you won't hear from nobody else that tell you they made too much money in real estate. But it's always trade-offs. But it's not the weak, it's the strong who will survive. And you got to look at every experience. Like we're talking about Amish economics. That's
mm-hmm.
a challenge that your audience should always think about. What if I start cutting out watching all this crap on TV that I watch? What if I cut out on driving around in expensive cars and can't keep gas in them, don't have nowhere to park these cars because most of them don't own homes? What if I stop that? What if I live in reality instead of living in the back country of thinking that's new to the new generation, which is not new? It's a travesty. The system want to keep us buying. That's the way it is.
Well, that's true. You're right, because with the some of the main, and you don't have to be Amish to adhere to some of these. Like, for instance, the typical American, well, let me put it this way, critical mass basis American, or even Westerner, they are addicted to consumption. Now,
yes.
The Amish, they're producers. They consume some, but they're producers. So they make their own clothes. The average person that's listening to this podcast doesn't. They make furniture. I mean, some Amish families do take in like $5 million a year.
That's right.
The family business.
That's right.
Now here's one takeaway that's been trending for the last few years. It's these tiny houses. Now, a lot of people who do these tiny houses. They're building their tiny houses and with no bank loans. You know, they might.
That's right.
So
it's got to be that.
That's
way.
One of the things that the Amish do. Matter of fact, I've even gone to a couple of tiny house weekends up in Vermont. Went 2 years in a row, about 3-4 years ago. And it was about, I think the first year was about 50 of us, you know, just building tiny houses or learning how to build. But the key is a lot of the tiny house people or hype that you hear out here, they're people that do not want to have a mortgage. Now, I don't know what the percentage is, but some of those people had to learn how to build a tiny house because they were evicted or foreclosed on. They had a family in many cases. So they had to learn how to build without debt.
Right. That's right.
And the Amish and many Mennonites have been doing that for decades.
Yeah, hundreds of years. Hundreds of years. And see, now, this is another issue. You brought up something that made me think about it. What we've been going through in the last year, this pandemic, virus, it's going to be a lot of houses coming up in the next year or so, maybe in the first part of next year. And they're going to be giving these houses away. The bank's going to give them to you because they want interest. They don't want the principal. They don't want to own the cow that's putting out the milk. They want to get the milk, okay? And so the thing is, be alert. In a downfall like we're in right now, we're going to have a shakeout in real estate. It's going to be plenty of properties to be had. But, like you stating earlier, Lee, how are we going to buy them? Okay?
You know, my whole strategy now, Albert, is don't buy any buildings. Buy land and build your own building.
Yes, that's the right. That's the way to do it. That gives you a start in life that you wouldn't have if the building was already there. Because you're paying for the pre-built building as well as land. See, so
here's what I've learned from some of this Amish economics. First thing is, because I had matter of fact, the root of this show, it's my house. The house was in a Washington D.C., which is a highly regulated area, city. Now, what I learned was it's less expensive. Now, this is our Amish economic thinking philosophy. It's less dramatically less expensive to buy land by the acre in a rural area,
right,
versus buying a city lot in a highly urbanized area.
You're shortchanging yourself. That's correct.
Right. So I bought my first 4 acres. I've got 15 acres in 3 locations now. So the first, it was like dramatically less expensive. And then I'm able to build.
As you go.
The first
as
thing, in a lot of places, in a lot of rural counties, not in all rural counties, but in a lot of the rural counties that I've set foot in, there's not even a code enforcement division.
Exactly.
And then I know, like in, I know at least 2 or 3 locations, and there's more than that, but that I've been in, that I've personally experienced, that people have built houses that they live in, and no building permit was required. So
That's incentive. That's an incentive
right
there.
So, but if you look at the way the Amish operate, a lot of them are, and the 3 big states for them, there's more. Matter of fact, I got the statistics right here. Indiana, Pennsylvania, and Ohio. But if you go up to Western New York, Buffalo area, you know, Buffalo, New York, Niagara, those places, you start to notice Amish communities there. They even have Amish communities outside the United States. Their numbers are growing.
That's right. It is.
Like in Lancaster, Pennsylvania,
that's
there's
the
over 40,000. You know what? That's that's another thing that I suggest people look at. Look at where the Amish have set up and go by in those counties as well.
Right, study.
But here's the catch 22, Albert. You got so many people that are addicted to consumption, hyper-consumption, that live in the D.C., Chicago, Miami, now in the state that you're in. How can you get a person that lives in Los Angeles County or Orange County or San Diego or San Francisco, how can you, that are struggling to pay the rent? You got people in those cities that have multiple roommates in an apartment.
They're stacking each other on top of each other to live. That's
right.
What they're doing.
How can you pull them out of that environment into, like I think I told you when we spoke earlier this week, I have a friend of mine that lived in Livermore, which is part of the Bay Area.
Mm-hmm.
And, man, she was struggling for years. Then she went to Northern California, up there by the Oregon border. It's almost like 3 acres of land for a fraction of what she was paying in Livermore.
That's right.
But some people, now this is all economic, but how can you pull the people who are addicted to San Francisco out of San Francisco?
It's mindset is what it is. What I was telling you,
right,
we were talking about it earlier. It's the mindset. Because if they only realize whatever goes up is going to come down, that usually worked that way. And now like you mentioned, San Francisco and Los Angeles, I'm in the middle of that. But San Francisco, the rents up there is running $4,000 or $5,000 a month just for, can you imagine that? But then again,
is that for an efficiency or a one bedroom?
That's one bedroom pretty well, Lee. Seriously.
Jeez,
a one bedroom will cost you rent $3,000 up, okay? A regular house, you can't rent a house. They call them flats now. You can rent a regular flat, everything, without anybody living in it, probably about $5,000. That's rent, okay? That's rent. You don't own that. You just rent
it. Right.
So what I would say to that, which I've told my and have talked about it with my family and my son about it. He lives in Livermore, okay?
Mm-hmm.
He bought a house. I bought it for him about 15 years ago. It was a condo, PUD. At the time we paid about $400,000 or $500,000 for that. And he got anxious because he started having a family. That's a true story right here. He started having a family, and his wife wanted to move out of the house. And you asked me earlier, did I live in the inflation time? Yes, I was there. Okay,
mm-hmm.
the houses went down. Like, and he come to me. He said, "Dad, I'm gonna sell my PUD." I said, "Man, you crazy?" I said, "You crazy? Don't you know you're gonna be sitting on a $1 million house in the next 4 or 5 years?" That was then, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And he sold it to some lady that worked at the Livermore nuclear plant there. A nurse, she bought that for $300,000. He lost over $200,000, Lee. Keep the story simple. And you know what it's worth right now? He came to me and told me, he said, "Dad, you were right. That property is worth $8, $9, or $1 million right now." Now, he's looking for a house now. And he's been looking for the last 7 or 8 months. He can afford it. He makes enough money. But he can't find one under $1 million, okay? And he told me, the dad up here, he said, "You can't live." I used to make a joke about it. I said, "You can't live on the hill if you don't pay the bill." And he said, I made that up years ago with them. And he come to me and he said, "Dad, you were right." He said, "We can't find," he said, "we have offers on houses that's worth $1 million and up. We got people offering, making bids, like 4 and 5, 8 in the line, wait." Okay. Where's all this money coming from? You know where it's coming from? People that have built houses there 40, 30, and 40 years ago that has paid for the houses that they were living in, and they cashed out as millionaire, house millionaires. That's what I call it.
Right.
And then they starting over again. But see, it's not the wealthy that's suffering, the needy. Again, it's the middle class people. But in a situation like you bringing up, Lee, we have to create space. And what they're doing now, they're moving to, they're coming out to where I live. What I mean by that is, they're buying out of the inner cities. They're buying in the rural areas now, like you mentioned earlier.
Right. Now, let me ask you about that, because for the last couple of 2-3 years, you hear a news story every now and then. A lot of people are moving out of California. The coastal areas of California, San Diego area, the Inland Empire, L.A., Orange County, Silicon Valley, the Bay Area, those are the areas where a lot of people are moving away from. So you say part of those that move in state, and because
yeah.
You're in Central California, correct?
That's right. I'm in the middle of it. In the middle. And cutting in, but what I'll get ready to say, too, my house that I'm living in right now, and I predicted it 30 years ago. I've been here for 32 years living here. I told my family then, I said, look, in another 10 or 15, 20 years, we'll be house rich in equity. And, again, that's what is coming to that. My house now, I bought it for $90,000. $90,000. 30-something years ago, you know what it's worth now? Close to $500,000.
Okay.
I haven't done nothing but live here. That's all. And see, and what I've noticed by living here, I get more people calling me and want to sell my house. They got to keep the debt going, Lee. I haven't borrowed on this
right.
house. Okay? And so that's why, I mean, it's just a trend. And see, what people are doing, they're moving to the valley, like I was telling you earlier. You got Modesto, you got Merced, you got Madera, you got Fresno, you got Visalia, you got Tulare, you got Bakersfield. That's where it stops right there. See, rest of it is L.A. any further down. And see, I saw this years ago at the.
You know, L.A. is the population is massive. In
yeah.
Los Angeles County and Orange County,
it's overcrowded.
Right.
But what they got to do, Lee, they got to figure out how we going to shake the load we got here, and that's what's happening. People are moving out to the valleys. I mean, like, at one of the auctions here in Fresno, real estate auctions. I go to those. I bought for this doctor. I bought over 40 acres in Corcoran. That's another rural area close to the hills out there.
Mm-hmm.
I bought 40 acres for this doctor for $19,000. Yeah. And when the minute we closed that, the city of Cork and one of the real estate agents worked there contacted me and said, hey, I'll give you twice right now. We hadn't even closed escrow on that. And so what I'm saying is, if I was young and up and coming, even older people, buy, and like you mentioned earlier, it's a very good idea, buy in the rural areas. That's what the Amish do indirectly. You'll never see them living in the city. That's too much pressure.
Right.
Okay? Study that. You'll never see an Amish living in the city itself, like L.A., San Francisco. You're talking foreign language to these kind of people to live like that.
You won't see them living in the city, correct?
And you won't see them
shopping at Whole Foods.
There you go. You know why? They raise their own food and they kill their own meat. They cure their own meats. Cause I've seen
right.
it in Kansas. I've seen that. They got what they call those houses? Where they cut meat up? They got those kind of houses.
Slaughterhouses.
Yes, I've seen that. But their meat is fresh. I mean, it's just like it come out of the oven. It's that fresh, okay? And the whole thing is. You don't think that's living, man. That's living. We
right,
now.
So.
We
a
pump
part
our,
of our. Go ahead and listen.
Go ahead on.
No, I was saying, getting ready to say, part of our Amish economics, the fundamental, we talked about strategy earlier. Number one, get out of the city.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You can't live in the city. You can't live in the city to be Amish, okay? Because to them, it's too much confusion and spin. It's the pushing of spin. You got to buy this. You got to buy that. And when people act like that, they can't stay out of debt. It's a mindset where they, it's a mental attitude where they think, oh, I'm so unhappy with myself because they're not spending. This this time that we've been in the last year due to this virus pandemic, it's driven people to nervous breakdowns. You know why? Have you heard that on the news about these people getting homesick?
Oh, yeah, people who committed suicide, things of that
nature.
Yeah,
well, what do you think that is? That's not all because they're sitting at home every day. It's that they can't spend money like they were. They've been conditioned to spend. And they're not going to tell you this truthfully, not the whole system, because they're digging into their own pot of gold. You spending, okay? And so when you look at a situation like we've been living through, the merchants have suffered because nobody's spending. They're not out there.
Mm-hmm.
But it puts years on our life to live, though, when you think about it.
Now, you know what? The Amish and many Mennonites are really not, really, they're not experiencing any hardship during
no,
this pandemic.
No, Lee, no.
Because
no.
They grow their own food for the most part.
Self-contained.
Grow and or catch their own food. They produce their own food for the most part. They have a de facto, I call it social capital,
mm-hmm.
a social capital
everyone.
Banking within their family or and or their communities.
Exactly.
Okay, they don't need a stimulus check. Okay.
You know what the stimulus check is? Caught you saying it myself. It's a way to keep the system spending.
Right.
The system is going bankrupt because they're not spending like they used to. The system, the merchants live off interest. The interest live off the people, okay? The people live off fantasies. And that fantasies are, you got to spend. I need this mattress. I need this bed deal. Did you think about that before we went through this? Did you think about what you needed before this stimulus crap come up? Did you really think about it? I don't think so.
No. Well, Albert, what I want to do is play this one clip, and then we'll get back to you. This ties in Amish economics as well.
Okay.
So can you imagine having to commute 3 hours to and then from your job every day? 6 hours of travel without even factoring your actual workday. Well, it is becoming more and more common. It's a phenomenon called supercommuting, and they don't mean that in a good way. And NBC News correspondent Jacob Soboroff saw it in full swing out in San Francisco. Watch this.
Every day at 4:23 p.m., Bernadette Price clocks out of her job at San Francisco University Medical Center to start her three-hour commute home.
And we're going to have exactly 3 minutes to get across that street.
Why do you have to do this?
Because it's too expensive to live here. We have to...
4:23 and 3 seconds.
Out.
Yeah, we're
Let's
gone.
Go.
All right, here we go. So where are we going?
Cross street to the Injuda.
Okay, so we have to have our cards ready?
Yep.
All right, here we go. Do you ever miss it?
Yep. But I always run to the next stop.
So if we miss it, we got to run to the next
stop? You got
to
run, yep.
Bernadette, do you like doing this?
Nope, but it keeps me in shape.
It keeps you in shape.
To live close to where she works, Bernadette would have to fork over an extreme amount of cash.
Thank you.
So the apartments that I pass by every day that I decided to call and check on are these right here.
And what would you say, we're about 10 minutes from where you work at the hospital?
Yeah, $4,500 in a shady area.
In a studio apartment?
Yes. This is it.
Okay.
This is the West Oakland stop. What would it cost you to live here?
Those apartments are low-income apartments, and I don't qualify for those.
Because?
I make too much money.
Too much is $64,000 a year because she's married with a 13-year-old son who she races to pick up every day from football practice. Going round trip between San Francisco and Stockton sounds extreme, but it's becoming more common. 3% of all Americans are now so-called supercommuters, spending over 90 minutes getting to and from work. In Stockton, where Bernadette lives, that number is 8%.
So we only have an hour and a half to get to your son's football practice.
Dream that I make it.
Next stop, freeway?
Yep.
As I just look in the rearview mirror and I see the sun is setting, it occurred to me that you probably leave the house before the sun comes up and get to the house back home after the sun's gone down. This is our exit?
This is our exit coming up.
So we're looking for number three?
Number three. There you go.
Hi, I'm EJ.
Nice to meet you, EJ. You guys want to go home?
Yeah.
All right, let's go. All
right.
What's it like to not be able to see your mom in the morning?
Kind of sad because I want to spend more time with her.
What's it like to hear him say that?
It's sad. I try to call him and wake him up every morning, say the motivational quote so that we can have a good day.
And what's the quote you say to each other?
I'm a leader, not a follower.
I'm a leader, not a follower.
And I will it to be a good day today.
Was today a good day?
Today yeah. was a good day. Got him on time. Always a good day if I get him on time.
Wow. Jacob Soboroff is with me now. Jacob, good morning.
Good morning.
Can I tell you, it really irritates me because here she is working so hard. Cops, firefighters, teachers, these are the ones having to do it while these tech giants make gazillions of dollars for, you know, working on a chip, which is fine. It's important. But why? Why should the people who actually keep the country running have to work that hard just to make from A to B?
It's a very good question that policymakers now across the country are having to deal with. The only, in my opinion, the only people that should wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning are people that work in morning television, like you and myself. Bernadette, who I talked to this morning, told me, first she says hello, but she told me she woke up today at 3 o'clock, a little extra early, because she was going today with EJ to go to high school orientations. He's only 13 years old. She's trying to plan that far ahead. It just so happens that the people who help us the most in our everyday lives are the ones that struggle the most in this kind
they're
of
they're the ones getting the short end.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's not even the doctors and the lawyers, although they're getting forced out too because of the cost of housing. It's the cost of housing. In San Francisco, medium home value is $1.293 million, almost $1.3 million. That's what she'd have to pay if she wants to buy a home there.
Right.
In Stockton, it's $274,000. So, I mean, there's no question where you'd live.
And prices are going up in Stockton as well. People are no longer just going to the suburbs. They're going beyond the suburbs in order to be able to go back and work in the cities. And this is happening, I think, in 40 of the 50 states. Super commuting has been on the rise. And in 30 of the 50 states, double-digit increases between like 2010 and 2015. It's out of control. And it's something, again, that in San Francisco, all throughout California, people are trying to figure out a way to get more affordable housing, and they're advocates, but they haven't been successful
there
yet.
Was something interesting proposed in Nantucket, right, about like subsidizing or putting like an extra tax on everybody's purchase.
Yeah, in order to pay for affordable housing. But people are always arguing, the people with the money, I don't want to pay additional taxes. I want to keep that money in my pocket.
Would you want a firefighter to show up if your house catches on fire?
That is the exact point.
He can't do a three-hour commute. like that's the trade-off.
It's the exact point. We have to remember that these are the people that make our everyday lives possible. If you went to that hospital in San Francisco and Bernadette wasn't able to commute there, you wouldn't have somebody
I'll
that would care
solution.
For your health.
Elon Musk is the solution. He says he's going to build some super rail that's going to get us from D.C. to New York in 29 minutes. It's going to be underground. He claimed that he had verbal approval from the Trump administration. We haven't seen any actual evidence of it, but yes.
I will ride it for you.
Okay, good. I believe that. We'll film it. Jacob, great to see you.
Good to see you.
And all the best to Bernadette, too.
Hello, Today fans. Thanks for checking out our YouTube channel. Subscribe by clicking that button down there. And click...
And that's mind-blowing, but a lot of people do six-hour commutes.
That's what I was talking about, Lee, earlier when they moving into the Central Valley, the valleys and stuff. They commute. Mm-hmm. A lot of them commute. I've seen this. This is not nothing new. This been going on for the last 10, 15 years until it really hit value, top value. Like she said, the average price of a house, home in San Francisco is $1.2 million. She's right about that. And that's and how many people can afford that? For one thing, you're talking about a mortgage. You're talking about a big mortgage. If you're mm-hmm. smart, you would go in as an Amish setup and get your friends together and pool your money together, a couple hundred thousand here, a couple hundred thousand there, and you'll own it within your own team, your partners, and you won't be paying as much interest. Plus, you will
well, that's
be
true.
Going.
You don't have to be Amish or Mennonite to use these Amish economic principles.
Yeah, you go. There you go.
Because, like,
you
on
go.
The East Coast, you've got people, actually, this is all over the country. I know, like,
yeah.
in D.C., there are people that take, I'll break it down this way. You have people that fly out of Reagan National to work.
That's right.
On D.C., you're at D.C., Baltimore, you got people from Delaware, New York metro area, on up to Boston. So you have people that, from D.C. to New York City, that's 212 miles That's a four-hour drive one way. Mm-hmm. All right. So you got people that live in D.C. that work in New York. You got people that live in New York that work in D.C. They're commuting. Mm-hmm. I know in Pittsburgh I met a guy. He and his wife lived Pittsburgh, but he worked. His job was in Boston. So he would fly to Boston. He would spend the week there and then come home on weekends. So I can say that is super commuted too. You also have trains, and I'm sure they had this in California too. You have trains. You basically don't even need a reservation. The MARC trains that go from D.C., Baltimore, down to Richmond, up to New York, 5 days a week. And all that commute money adds up. But like you said, if you get together with families that is on the same mindset or friends and set yourself up a little community or a compound.
You can afford
where
that. You can afford that house.
You can afford that.
And see, that's
and
what,
start putting money in your pocket out of every paycheck.
There you go. And we can do that, Lee. We can do it because when the times changes, our mind has to change with the times, or we're gonna get left behind.
Right.
And the whole thing is, what the solution to me would be in San Francisco, which is I'm predicting that today on your show here, we're gonna see more partnerships evolve than you ever heard of.
And I'm gonna have to bring her on one day. A friend of mine, Sylvia. Like I said, she lived in Livermore. That's the one I was talking about that lived in Livermore.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Man, she had all kind of jobs, you know, factory jobs, making sandwiches, all this kind of stuff, breaking her back, then she ran across something up in there. Her and a friend of hers partnered up. So now she grows, matter of fact, she knows how to make her own dirt. Okay.
That's amazing.
She grows, she doesn't grow all of her food. But she grows a lot of vegetables, and she's got chickens and all that. She's got a stream that runs through the property. Now, there's no way she could have bought the two. It's almost 3 acres. It's like 2.7 acres. There's no way she could have bought that in San Francisco.
Oh,
there's
no.
No way. Not that much land for that price in San Francisco. No way
no.
she could have done it.
Then, guess she probably.
And she partnered with somebody just like you said. It's a partnership.
Yes. And it's going toward that way, Lee, because we have to use our minds more. Not I make a joke about it. We can't use our behinds, but it's our minds. And the whole thing is when things like this happen, like the expense of San Francisco, LA, create a way to afford it, but create it in a way where it's stress free. You're not going through all that stress to own it. And like you were talking about commuting, for example, my daughter got a doctor's degree just last year from Tulane University. You know where that's at, don't you?
Yeah, in Louisiana.
That's right. She lived in California. But what I told her, I said, you don't have to move back there. Just take a flight every week or every month. Work around that. She did that for 2 years. You know what the instructors told her? We never seen nothing like this. Well, it's the thought.
Well, you know, now she can tell it. Well, I mean, now people can telecommute if they hold classes online.
That's right. That's where it's going to. Okay. But you got to follow the trends, Lee. And most of us, I'm not keep trying to down the black because I'm black myself. But the blacks got to be aware of that. That, hey, where there's a challenge, there's an answer. There's an opportunity. How do you think the Bill Gates them created Microsoft and all that? They had to have challenges somewhere in between there. Now you see Silicon Valley all over the place on the West Coast. But Bill Gates, Apple, the one that owned the Apple computer.
Oh, yeah, Wozniak and Steve Jobs. Yeah,
he's dead. He's passed, bless his soul. Mm-hmm. But they all started in a team. When you think about it, it was a team because one.
Oh, yeah, Wozniak and Steve Jobs basically started out of a garage.
That's right. Now, if they can do that, man, I mean, and got billion-dollar companies now, how come we can't get a fraction of that?
Well, you know what, and that's a very important Amish economic principle, the power of partnerships.
There you go. And that's That's what...
Including that, personal relationships that
yes.
act as real partnerships.
It's a win-win, Lee. It's a win-win. That's what it is. And when people say, well, these houses is just out of the market. I can't afford them no more. You keep telling your mind that you can't. You should be looking at the idea, well, what can I create that might put me into where I want to be or live and create something
well,
for the next generation?
You know what, going back to the Amish and Mennonites, they have potluck dinners. They make cakes, bake, I mean, pies.
Yes,
they
yes.
sell them. They make jellies, jams, sell them.
That's what they used to do with churches.
A lot of home cooking, they sell it.
Well, let me tell you this. My mother, when I was growing up, they had a church. True story. They had it built. But when they built that church, it was debt-free. You know how they did it? What you just said. Selling pies. I mean, the whole members in the church, black church, put their heads together and made these foods to sell. The church was dedicated debt-free, $100,000 30 years ago. Wasn't that a lot of money? Huh?
Yeah, it's particularly 30 years ago.
Well, how come we can't stay with that?
Well, it's like you said, you don't need a million people, but if you concentrate in small numbers like the Amish, they basically base everything on family.
That's
so you might only, they get together, one family or two families, and they build a debt-free house. They keep that going on, and then they might have a family business. Could be from foods, open up some kind of restaurant, could be a side stand, selling quilts. Because a lot of ways that they have made millions of dollars.
Yes.
Are really a lot of simple things.
Yes.
Very simple.
That's all it was. Everyday things to live. Not extra
right.
things to give and to stress out over. Because again, it's the mindset. We have to change our minds in order to get afford and get ahead of the game. You have to say, do I need this? Do I need that? It's got to be a need for what you buy now, people. That's what I'm saying.
You know, it's interesting. The Amish, that's made in America. But you go to Walmart, a lot of things in Walmart is made in China or someplace like that.
That's right.
But
do you see
a lot
that
of people are addicted to going into Walmart.
That's right. Can't blame Walmart, can you?
Can't blame Walmart.
No,
yeah.
But I'm saying that's the travesty of it. They want to keep this. Now, Walmart is worth billions of dollars. The family is. But wait, that money came. Yeah, that money came from us as consumers, okay? But you can't
well,
blame
you know,
Walmart.
A lot of the if you look at like some of the stuff that's in Walmart is made in Bangladesh. So a lot of people, you know what? Now let's look at a parallel here. Amish live simple lives. People that live in Bangladesh live simple lives. Okay. Or Vietnam lives simple lives, or China, a lot of them live simple lives, and a lot of this stuff is made in, when you go in these, even overseas, in rural areas.
Mm-hmm.
No, this stuff is that you say made in China is not made in Beijing or Shanghai. It's made in little villages that most people have never even heard of.
Yeah, I understand that, okay, and the point mm-hmm. is, why don't you go directly to the source and buy those things? Why do you have to buy them from Walmart? That's another issue. I mean, that's like I told you I bought the pan cleaners, the scoffers,
mm-hmm.
at the Amish shops. You know what, it's the markup in between. That's where the overpaying comes in, okay?
Right.
We have to learn to go to the source to buy the product we're looking for. If we can't go to the source physically, do it over the Internet. Look it up. Check it out. You're saving money in wholesale prices. And that's what I had to learn teach my wife over the years. I've learned her that. Like now, for instance, she was buying batteries for a machine she had. She was paying like $20 a battery. I go on the website, find a source. I bought it for $5. And she said, Albert, she said, you know, you showed me. I said, you have to follow the trend. And, you know, I'm going to say this. Pointing, this is one thing out of all the things I've said today. The wealthy do not spend money that much, believe it or not. They use other people's money. Okay? Most wealthy people never touch the principle of what they created because they got people out there that's going to make them wealthy and wealthier by consuming. Think about what I just said. You show me a millionaire, a billionaire, that's not their money that's coming. They're rotating their money in other places, overseas. Sad to say that. But the ones that's carrying the load, and I laugh at it, and I'm laughing again at it indirectly, it's the middle class, okay? The poor people don't have to have no worries because all the system's taking care of them. The system know where they're going to stay at the bottom. The middle class is trying to work to get to the top, and the wealthy people is keeping them in the middle. Check out the
That's true. Thing. Now, yeah, check, Albert, before we go to the phone lines, now you've written at least two books I know about.
Four books.
All right, share with us. Well, give us the title of those books, what they're about, and how we can get them.
Okay, the first book that I wrote, I updated it. It's How to Make Money, 24 Hours a Day. And let me give you my link. You can request one over the link. Or I have websites too. But you can directly contact me at Elbert, that's ELBERT. It's a dash. It's not an underscore, but it's a dash Lee, LEE. At sbcglobal.net. Global.net. That's ELBERT dash Lee at sbcglobal.net. Now, one of the books Lee can be ordered off of Amazon. You can get it for a song now, one of them. And that's under Albert Lee. And the name of that title is Strive to Arrive. Strive to Arrive. And that's on Amazon. That's very cheap, what I'm asking for that book. That's the second book. The third book I just written, it's quotes by Albert Lee, quotes, like we're talking about different things. And you can order that directly through me. Or you can order it off one of my websites. One of my websites is Strive to Arrive. StriveToArrive2.com. You can order it from there.
Mm-hmm.
That's three books. I said quotes. Okay, the fourth book is I've written so many books in the last year, but again, it's a Strive to Arrive 2, book 2. It's a continuation of the Strive to Arrive 1.
Okay, that's the one I need to read. I haven't read that.
Yeah, I got it. I updated it, put new stuff in there, which I'm going to get you a copy there. And all these books can be ordered directly through my email if you want to order them like that. What you do is if you want to, I don't accept cash in the mail because you, I hate to say I don't accept cash, but you can request for me to send you either book. Each book I just told you about is selling through me at $7.95. Just say $8 a book. And that's not
And then you got one on Amazon Kindle.
Yes. You can get that for 99 cents.
Yeah, 99 cents on Amazon Kindle.
Yes, that's right. And you can get it in paperback for $5.95 on Amazon. That's right now up and running right now. And if you want to reach me, you can call me, Lee. You know how to call. You can call me on my cell phone.
Right. Now, do you still do speaking engagements?
Yes. in between, yes. Zoom meetings, yes. I do Zooms. You name it, and it's speaking. That's what I'm working on now to
get
more
out
there.
Okay, we got to get you on a Zoom, yeah, because I'm on a Zoom call once or twice a week.
I know you are, and you're the man to do it. See, that's
well, I'm on other people's Zoom calls now.
I know, but see, you yeah. got a following. You built up. You worked this. This is a man who I'm talking to. We started roughly the same time in what we were doing in life, and he's still.
Well, now you were ahead of me, Albert.
Yeah, a little bit. You followed though. You came in and just failed right.
Yeah, because I read it. Matter of fact, that's the best $2 I spent with that newsletter that Green put out. Bill Tycoon Green. Yeah, he had a $2 newsletter, but you get the newsletter, and it was a good newsletter. It came out of regular, you know.
Yeah.
And it was only $2 for the year, or whatever. So
that
was the best.
Of,
I think the first, one I got had your promoted to your first book, and that's how we connect. Man, that's back in the early 80s. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, back then.
But, no, I was written up in the Chronicle. You're talking about San Francisco. They did an article on me during that period of time. I don't know if you ever knew that, a four-page article. And
I could have read that.
Yeah, I would have had to. But, see, they were saying that I was this and that because the poor people. And it's a story that you'd have to follow, but. The poor people create problems on their own doing, I'll say.
Mm.
And if you listen to a person that's been there and done that, and what I've learned is the difference between a millionaire or a successful person, they just made more mistakes than a person that haven't done nothing. That's all. They just learn more by making mistakes. And it don't create geniuses or nothing like that. It's life experiences. That's all it is. You can't be afraid to fall, cause you gotta get up. You remember that. And if you stay down, that's when you fail. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But what's wrong with learning from experiences? I mean, I tell people, I have learned things, Lee, from over $1 million mistakes that I made. Now, how many people can say that?
Mm.
How many people can say that? And it's just all about learning.
I wish I would have grasped the Amish economics concept back in the early 80s. And the thing is, I knew about Amish since, like third grade, 8 years old. I became aware of it.
We weren't trained, but we weren't groomed for
right.
that, though. Mm. We had to break out of the box. We all have to do that. And we only knew what we were taught by staying in a cesspool. I hate to say it that way.
Mm-hmm.
We only lived what we were taught because our parents, they never really broke out of the cesspool. Maybe a few of them did, the successful black people. They learned something that we didn't know, find it out themselves, and how they found it out was making mistakes. Okay?
Yeah.
And it's no successful person can tell you they went to straight to the prize when they started. It's going to be some zigzags all the way along the road. But it's how much the zigzags you want to zig and zag. And that's what I'm telling people. The black people are conditioned to stay poor. Come out of that. Please get out of that rut. Okay?
Well, I think I've mentioned this before. In the United States, and it's just not black people, but I'm going to use black people in this example. Black folk have bought into the American dream more than white folks. Now, the American dream is basically hyper-consumption.
Yeah, you know what I
all
call
right?
that? You know what I call that?
We
got
to get a bigger car. We got to get a bigger house. We had to buy more expensive clothes. We had to buy more clothes.
It's the American scheme, Lee. That's what it is.
Oh, yeah, well, you're right. The American scheme. This is the American dream.
Yeah.
And whereas Amish economics is the polar opposite of that.
It's reality, Lee. I can't afford this. I'm going to do this in order to offset what I can't afford. And if I can't afford this, I'm going to wait, if it take another year or two, to get to this. But I'm not going
right.
I'm not going to put a curse on myself by going into debt. That's basically what it says. Debt is the biggest slavery it is debt. Don't you know?
Well, if you're a consumer, a hardcore consumer, and not producing, because I don't consider a paycheck every 2 weeks for producing. If you're not producing, because you can bake an apple pie. That's production.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
Then you're right. That debt will turn into a curse. You know what? I'd rather walk into a hardware store, Home Depot, Lumber 84. I'd rather walk into there and get what I need to build something.
Yeah.
Then to walk into a Bank of America and borrow anything.
Listen, Lee, when they say ready-made, well, they're going to get paid. And what I mean by that, they're going to get you for everything they can get you for interest, everything.
That's true, and fees and penalties and
all
that.
Yeah, but you know,
Albert, let's take a call before we run out of time here.
Okay.
314, your mic is open.
Yeah, good conversation.
Thank you.
You're talking about building houses. The average person ain't not going to build no house.
You're right.
And
we're
the average person is not going to grow no garden. But you know, I'm going to tell you something. You talk about the Amish.
Mm-hmm.
Amish, see, you're missing a key point. Amish have their own sawmills where they cut their own lumber for
everything.
The building structures that they build.
Very good observation.
Yeah, and see, that makes a difference. And I would challenge anyone, you take your tiny house and do a inventory on what it would cost material to build at home, the number 2x4s, 2x6s, and concrete. You'd be surprised that's not cheap, especially today. At the escalation
of
lumber prices
during this pandemic has shot up.
Yeah. But then again, too, I wouldn't want to be buying no million-dollar house and trying to get it financed. It's just, and I hear you, Mr. Lee, you got to realize, too, some people just ain't going to make it.
That's true, too. That's true.
See,
true.
Some people just are not going to make it.
Why do you think that is, though? Why do you think
That's just human nature. That's just the way it is amongst humans. Somebody's got to be consumers.
Exactly. But that's the system, though, too. But
If
that's what your parents taught you, that's what they demonstrated,
that's in every ethnic group's system. They put a system together for which is going to operate for the society.
That's right. Amish have been around for hundreds of years. And that's the catch. That's the get up on over us as minorities.
Well, you're right.
And
they indoctrinated.
Just brought up a good point, and when he brought up, because I never thought about it until he said it. They got their own sawmill. Man, that's
everything, Lee. They got everything. When you say Amish, that means own. To me, it spells own.
Yeah.
He's right about
it. You got your own sawmill. You don't need to go to Home Depot.
Go ahead on, buddy.
Not for wood, at least.
Yo,
see, one of the things, and see, here's another thing. All blacks are not the same.
That's true.
They didn't come from the same place, and I hear that all the time. I hear people say that blacks need to go to school and come out and start their business. Well, you can't do that. You
no,
may
not
mention
everybody.
Yourself that you work for somebody to do what? To learn. The business.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You
right.
can't go to work for some. You can't learn from somebody who's failed. Well, you really can. You know, it's a little bit more difficult. But you got to see it working.
Exactly.
In order to better understand it.
Exactly.
And one of the things that hamper black society today is the education of their kids. The kids are being raped in these school systems.
Mm-hmm.
And guess who's making the money off of them? It's blacks themselves. Whites are long since left that.
Thank you. You said it.
And it's just like people complain about capitalism, and they complain about redlining is really good. You know what redlining tells me, and I tell this to L.A. all the time? It tells me where not to move and where not to send my kids to school.
That's right.
Because if you do go inside that, you just percolating a continuation of mediocrity and failures.
Yes, yes. It has to be that way to the on one part. Like you said earlier, the system has to have the failures as well as the people that
you got to have failures. If you don't, something ain't working right.
That's right. And do you think, and I'm going to ask you this question. We've been in this pandemic for going on a year going on 2 years.
A little bit over. Yeah, it's about a year right now. Yeah.
Do you think this is good for the society?
No. I'm going to tell you what you got going on here. You got a bunch of dumb, ignorant people.
It's being hoodwinked into...
To the point they're scared to come outside, scared to take a mask. And I always ask them, well, the human genome is the first humanoid. No matter whether they crawled around on all fours or finally stood up and walked, they have been exposed to hundreds of trillions of viruses. And the best researcher is the human body itself.
Yeah, body's perfect, I think. I think it is.
You're damn right it is.
Mm-hmm.
It has survived.
Yes, yes, yes. And this is the thing that what you just talking about and saying, if we all thought this in our own mind, which like you say, everybody's not going to do it, I know that. Matter of fact, 97% of the people are not going to do what we're talking about.
No,
that's how bad it is. But
now,
if we had everybody with this mindset like you're talking about,
mm-hmm.
We would create our own commune or compound, and that's the way of thinking. But see, we've been enslaved for years by the mind. The mind, to me, is a powerful thing that most of us don't use.
Well, you know, you got a lot of black organizations out here got blacks conditioned that white folks won't let them do nothing. It's white this,
well,
white that.
And you know what I did for a living, Lee?
I put a, you know them buildings that fell down in New York during 9/11?
Oh, yeah, that 9/11, yes. Uh-huh.
I had a company that put buildings up like that.
See, right there.
Skyscrapers.
But now let me say this. Didn't you create that out of necessity, right?
I started that because I wanted to do it.
No, but I'm
because
saying
I had been doing it.
Right, but you were observing the obvious. But how many people do that?
Well, I couldn't go to see another thing too. That's why I tell you people have to do these things. I couldn't went to Harvard or Yale to learn how to do that because it's not taught.
It's not all about that.
I had to do that from running other people's work and doing it myself. But
I've seen a lot of. No, you're right, what you're saying. I've seen a lot of uneducated geniuses where you can be an educated fool, too, if you want to look at it that way, okay? It's a balance in between. Where do you fall in that balance? It's up to you, okay?
But, you know, California is another case. Even if you bought lumber in, say, Louisiana, but to build affordable homes in California, you got to get the land, which is expensive as hell.
Mm-hmm.
Then you got to transport that out there. You definitely need to have a train system to do it efficient because you can't transport it in trucks because the cost is too damn high.
Mm-hmm. So what do you do? What do you do on that situation, though? Like I was talking
Well,
earlier.
Let me tell you how you do that. You would have to perfect the crew because I'm here in my winter home down here in Louisiana, and the Mexicans are doing all the work. Blacks ain't doing nothing.
You're right. Hardly. You're right.
They take two people because I built my own house. I designed and built my own 4,000 square foot home. And I acquired the lumber, material, and everything. I built it myself. And I walked away from it, too, because of the neighborhood I wanted to get out of it.
That's true. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely understand that. See.
Yeah. See, that's another thing. People talking about you need to live around certain folks. Uh-uh.
Oh, boy, I'm laughing.
You don't want to do that because it's just like leaving, throwing your pearls to the swine.
Yeah. Yeah, they say you're trying to please the Joneses and not your own
pocket. Yeah, but you know what they do here? They pour a slab and put in all the rough plumbing and fixtures, and plumbing and wiring, and that's going to be in the slab, especially the plumbing. Then they would have two men come in and frame that house.
Mm-hmm.
No matter how – two men really can frame a house. I framed the house by myself, and, of course, my wife helped, you know, time too. But two men can come and frame a house to the point where you put the roof sheeting on. Then you bring people in to put the roofing on.
Mm-hmm.
Then they go on and put the exterior on. They bring in the brick crew if it's going to have brick veneer. They bring in the finish, the plumbing, electric personnel. And you can build a house relatively cheap. But the first cost is the land.
Mm-hmm.
The second cost is the material.
Cost to do
the labor can be affordable.
That's
I think
right.
You could build a house like I'm seeing somebody. The house I built of mine cost me about $38,000.
Boy, you made money on that, man.
But
I don't care where it's located, you made money on it.
But the thing is that you can do it, but it had to be carefully done. It has to be a system. It has to be a system,
team.
Just like
gotta be a
like
team.
A yeah, just like a Ford automobile line,
assembly line. That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
But let me ask you this now. Let me say this now. What if you might have did this? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
What if you would have took that $38,000, but you already had to pay it off through sources? Did you build that debt free?
Yeah, I built that out of my pocket.
Okay, now, you don't think that you made more money than the bank could have gave you over 20 years?
Oh, yeah. You know, I'll tell you something else. I financed – see, my company, I didn't buy insurance. I bought bonds.
Uh-huh.
And paid myself the insurance premium.
That's smart. That's smart. That's smart. Smart.
My daughter's home.
But you're not the average.
You know,
you're not the average person, buddy.
No, you're not. You finance your kids' home, and they pay you.
That's Amish economics.
You finance your own car. You pay cash for your car and pay the payments to yourself.
That's right. See, that's what I'm getting at right there. It's all.
I know a guy in Germany that does that with his family. When
a
family member needs a car, they do
exactly
what you just said.
But how many people can say what he just said and talked
about?
Well,
like the statistic that you guys threw out earlier, what, 97% is probably higher than that.
Could be.
Because most people, I mean, 97% don't do it. Because essentially we have society has been brainwashed is consume, borrow this, borrow that.
That keeps them in business.
You guys are on a different wavelength.
That's why they're trying to pay the people off with stimulus so they can keep spending. There's no money being turned around out there. But how can we can't live this way if we didn't have a pandemic?
Well, you got to have stupid people. You know, I do stocks and options. I used to teach it.
Oh, okay. Well, you know what I'm talking about.
And I still do it now for myself. I'll be on here and I'll be clicking things and a bell go off and I tell Elliot, well, I just done 650, so on and so on.
But here's the thing.
People are taught to buy and hold.
That's right.
I teach my people to sell, take their money. And you got to have, if you don't have people out there doing that, then, you got to take advantage of the direction that things are going.
I just said that earlier, right, the challenges that we're confronted with.
And you're right about their buying and holding thing.
Yeah,
I got caught with my pants down. On 30 buildings buying and holding one.
But Lee, like I said, don't condemn it. Bless it because you learned something from that. Okay?
Oh, yeah.
That's right.
You got to sell. You got to sell.
Yeah, that's right. And you got to make mistakes too, though. Okay?
Don't buy nothing today. Don't buy nothing today, Lee, that you can't sell by next Friday.
That's right. I've learned that. I deal a little bit in that cryptocurrency and Bitcoin stuff. But, you know, I know, and Lee know I never put money in those stocks or nothing like that. But I'm not doing as much as I used to do. I get bored. But then again, you got to have a hold on how much you're going to spend, like you said earlier, because you can be a spending fool and end up with nothing, okay? And, like, I believe in the old system, they say what J. Paul Getty said years ago, don't keep all your eggs in one basket. You got to spread them out.
Right. It's best to have 10% in 10 things and 100% in one.
That's right, because something's got to hit, okay? And to me, where you obviously, brother, you understand what I'm saying. I don't have no challenge to convince you because you know you've done that. You've been there. See, that's the difference too, right?
I tell you something else blacks do. Their politics is jacked up.
Yes.
They vote for the same. See, you get criticized for voting for Donald Trump. But Donald Trump, when he lowered business tax from 35% down to 21%, he wanted to go to 15%. What fool would argue against that?
Well, see, the thing is, you competing with poor people, and that's why Biden was elected. Because the poor
you're absolutely right. You compete against poor people that does things from an emotional standpoint.
There you go.
Standpoint.
You're not going to change. You're not going to change their mind. It's going to be
You cannot be in stocks and live on emotions. Your ass will go broke.
Yeah, see, that's the mentality right there. See, I mean, it just, again, if we can read the trends of what we're seeing and going through, it ought to make pioneers out of all of us, okay? But that's, again, what I told Lee earlier.
A lot of people don't want to be a pioneer, though.
No, they want to be a follower.
Now, agriculture is a good thing to be in. See, now, blacks, you got rice growers in Louisiana, southern Missouri, and a couple other states.
But
blacks don't own no mills. See, when you harvest your rice, you sell it to a mill. Mill going to pay you what they want to pay you, which is basically the market. They don't turn around and resell. They hold it until the price goes into their favor. Then they sell it.
They're hedging. That's right. See, they're hedging. And that, but see, how come we can't hedge as black people? How come we can't start spending what we need to buy?
I think people have to become aware of a lot of this.
That's the catch. That's why I keep going back to
it. You got to have awareness first.
It's the mindset. It's the mindset.
Yeah.
But then we wasn't raised that way, though. See, that's what it is.
No.
But you can
well,
use
that's
it as
why you wrote. That's why you've written those four books, Albert.
Yeah.
It's just like restaurants. Blacks want to have restaurants. You got a restaurant selling fried chicken.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you really want to do it right, you got to raise the chicken. You got to process the chicken.
Right.
You got to store.
Right.
You got to transport the chicken.
That's what I'm
And doing. That way, if your business competitor down the street sells your chicken dinner 50 cents less than you, they still going to buy the chickens from you.
Exactly.
So you ain't losing.
Exactly.
Well, people don't understand that.
No, it's
starting
starting
a hair care business don't mean a damn thing because
that's
the Koreans supply it. They put white folks out of that business.
They got the market. They own the market.
From the rooter to the tutor.
That's right. I've heard that before, and that is true. Who said that? I'm the black guy made that up. I saw him.
Now, there might be a few, not even a few, barely a handful except. Now, Dudley Products, he manufactures his.
Okay.
That's one company.
Yeah, he manufactures outside of his country, too. You can't make nothing in the United States.
Oh, you know what? You're right about that.
Paying people $15 an hour.
Zimbabwe. You're right. Yeah, I mentioned that yesterday. He's got a outfit in Zimbabwe, and he's got one in Brazil. You're right about that.
You're damn right he do.
That's where he's making his money.
You're right.
But see, that's what I'm trying to tell you. But then isn't that more than one egg in a basket?
Yeah.
Patriarch, when you mentioned, because I was thinking about, just use a Carol as an example. I remember one up in D.C. I was in a movie to get some wings. So I walked past this black carryout. They had just opened in the neighborhood. I mean, I walked in there, and I looked at their price, but it was a little bit too higher than what I wanted to pay. So then I walked about four or five doors down within about 30 seconds of that. to the Chinese carryout, ordered wings. They were less expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I walked, now I could have walked home another direction. But
well, let
I
me tell you something.
Back in front of the black-owned place, and man, I got a dirty look. But they didn't know. More than likely, they didn't know what you just said, Pianki, that the Chinese joint, which is they were Koreans by that time, they got a whole supply chain going, whereas these people are probably just going to either the local grocery store.
They're probably buying their chicken from the Chinese. See, here's another thing. If you want, blacks want to open up retail stores and buy wholesale from Asians. Asians are not going to give you family prices.
Uh-uh.
Where you're going to compete against their cousins. They are not foolish.
Yeah, no way.
It ain't going to happen. And let me tell you something else too, Lee. The beauty of what we call residual income. That means you make money while you sleep.
Mm-hmm.
You can open up a retail store, okay? You can't compete against me. You know why? Because you need the sales from that retail store in order for you to live off of.
That's right.
I don't need it. I'm already living.
That's
so what I'll do is open up my store, and yours is down the street, and in a matter of time, I will be in your store buying stuff 10 cents on the dollar when you go out of business.
You know, I saw in my neighborhood in D.C. in another direction, there was a 7-Eleven, and then when they got out of the neighborhood, because it was a glut-em at that time in the D.C. metro area, a couple of black guys got that location. It was a good location. But they eventually went out of business within a year. And Koreans did what you just said. They came and bought their stuff cheap.
That's how they got.
They still
got
the store to this day, over 20, 30 years later.
That's how they made their money.
Mm-hmm. They sit there and watch it.
Yeah, because see, when you see these, what's his name? Icon. I can't think of his name, but he made a fortune. Which we're talking about buying rundown businesses and bankruptcies and stuff.
Carl Icahn, he started with TWA.
Yes, and he made a fortune by doing just that. He waited till the business is set up and get started, and they're eventually going to go under. Because the average life of a business, we know, is 1 to 5 years before they fail. It's a true story there. And if you can go past 5 years, get to 7 or 8, then you're on your way to maybe making it, okay? But like we're talking about now, all of us together here, the trial is, can you change with change? Can you change? Can you redirect if you have to? It's like if the wind blowing over here, can you go over there in order to offset the wind? And most of us do not understand the facts of change. That's the biggest problem.
Well, you know, you talk about change, you got to have competition. Because I'm going to tell you, if AT&T would still be using dial rotary phones if it wasn't for competition, why would you change?
That's
people
right.
Buying it, they use
that's
it.
You got a good point.
But when they came in with the touch tone, then they had to change.
And now they're in with the cell phones.
They had to change.
Yeah, but see, that's the problem. And see, the thing is, we as business, black business people, and I'm not putting down blacks because I'm black myself again, but I have to learn, if they can do it, I can do it on a smaller scale. You see what
I'm
saying?
Well, you know, in my opinion, what happens to a lot of black folk is we have, on a critical mass basis, as I always say, a wait-and-see attitude.
And that's too late.
And that's
right.
Too late.
Well, you know where that shows up? You vote for somebody, then wait and see what they do instead of giving them their marching orders before you vote for them.
Yes, that's right. They got to go ahead. See,
you tell them what you want them to do. You don't go vote for them and see what the hell they want to do based on how their heart feel.
Yes, and that's what. But then again,
on a critical mass basis.
Yeah.
That's what happens.
The system is built on. Stepping on you, us, okay? That's what it's built on. And we got to get our money to step in order to be able to succeed.
Well, like
let me tell you how that. Let me tell you how that worked out with
the marching orders. But we got to start
the
business first, though. We need those businesses and industries to be flourishing first to really bankroll a political agenda.
That's right.
And White's done that themselves. You remember streetcars, Lee? Electric streetcar. They had electric streetcars going way back when. You know what put them out of the market? You had General Motors, Firestone, and Standard Oil.
That's right.
They built
That's
buses
right.
called the National City Line, and it was in the city. Matter of fact, the Montgomery Bus Boycott.
San Francisco has these streetcars.
Yeah, the National City Lines was the bus company that they boycotted in Montgomery, Alabama during King and them. Okay.
That's amazing. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Okay, now check this out. Those three entities, Albert P. Sloan, the president of General Motors, you had Firestone. They went to Eisenhower and talked about building the interstate highway system. And he did. That caused people to be able to buy cars, use tires from Firestone, gasoline from Standard Oil.
All in that family. That's right. It's all in that family. See.
And they put them down electric streetcars out of business.
But let me tell you another thing gonna go out. Let me tell you another thing gonna go out of business. In this matter, maybe 4 or 5 years. It's the gas cars. It's gasoline cars. I mean, it's gonna be electric cars coming in there pretty quick.
Well, I'm gonna tell you something. It's gonna be a walk for that shit to go down.
It's gonna be a big war. It's gonna be a lot of people suffering, but that's just the way it's gonna happen.
It's gonna be a big war.
Look, you got Musk. What's his name? M-U-S-K.
Elon Musk.
Yeah.
I mean, he's worth billions in electric cars.
Well, first thing, I'm into EVs, but once again, awareness has got to come first.
That's the key. That's right.
Well, them electric cars it costs as much as but they use electric to charge them. I don't see that happening, really.
Well,
I tell you another thing I don't see happening is high-speed trains, neither, putting airlines out of business.
You know, in California now, they got the high-speed train going. They stopped for a while on the building. And that high-speed train setup is going to go from San Francisco to L.A. in a matter of 30 minutes, okay? It would take you that long to drive.
Well,
okay, but now they're working on it, but I don't know if they're going to ever finish it.
One of these governors here in Florida, it's not DeSantis, the current governor in Florida, but one of these governors here in Florida, they shot that down because the talk was supposed to run from Tampa Bay area to Orlando.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And the governor at that time, I forgot his name, he shot that down.
That's what happened here. And, it would have been pretty well built, but we had a mayor here that just didn't agree with that. And so they stopped it. Well, it's costing billions of dollars, but you know one thing? We got to have that, though, because we got to have a way to get to one city to the next because of the immigrating out of the cities and stuff like that.
Well, you know that the 6-hour commute audio I played. Now, I forgot what part of California she was in. How much on the end user end would those tickets be expensive to use the higher speed rail? Because typically, the more convenience you have, the higher it is. The more expensive it is.
That's a good question. What I see is, if you got millions of people taking it, you don't need to raise the price sky high. Volume will take care of the expenses to a point.
I can see that because you already see it in cities. In D.C., you got that deal. You got Metrolink.
In D.C., that 95 corridor needs it.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So that's telling you we're behind right now, behind you guys. We're in California. But now the problem is how many people don't want to accept that. That's why we had this stopping on this project. We stopped for 4 or 5 years, I think, something like that, because it scared the people. People was afraid of change. And we got to have this change in order to deal with the next generation. Because otherwise, if we still ride these buggies,
the next generation that'll bring it in.
Yeah, if we start riding, if we keep riding in our buggies and stuff, hey, we're gonna be sitting there riding all day long to get to one place to the next.
Well,
well,
the economy's changing so fast anyway, because you got people that are doing things by apps.
Yeah.
You know, grocery shopping with apps, Uber, Lyft.
It's been billions of dollars made off the internet. Billions
right,
of dollars.
You know, the gig economy, digital nomad. So eventually, the high speed train will be here.
Yeah, and they gonna put the grocery stores out of business if they don't change. These, I hate to say this.
Now,
Piyaki,
what's your take on drones?
Well, yeah, drones can be used for delivery. You know what? The next billionaires is gonna be made. It's gonna be made in Africa. If you ever
I
get the politics,
you know what?
There.
I agree with you 1,000,000,000% on that. I study, man. The best innovation I've seen, just for my little tiny niche, is coming out of Africa.
Oh yeah, everything.
They got some geniuses over there.
See, Africa.
And I said, go ahead on.
When you get up out of that chair, Lee, and go over to the switch on the wall and click it, something positive happened. It ain't like that in Africa. It may happen. It may not. Lights may come on. They go off by themselves. So they just that far behind. Sewage system, they way behind.
That's the difference right there.
Yeah.
Okay. And to bring them up to speed, it's going to be billions of dollars made. Am I correct?
You're going to have billions of dollars made. Now, here's the thing with that. Africans got the blueprints, but the people don't have the money to pay. You can't sell the empty pockets. I don't give a damn how good your plan is.
I'm laughing because that's reality, too. That is reality.
That's true. You know, they got plans, but the idea is you got the politics, the corruption in the politics, and then you got the fact that, see, you got to start us. You have to take a society like that and go slow with it. You can't take them into Jetson-type transportation.
Put them in the dark, huh?
Yeah,
I'm laughing at that. You're right, buddy. You're right.
You gotta go slow. You can't go from fully automatic agriculture. You gotta have manual agriculture because people got to be able to make money.
That's true.
Right. To pay for the electricity. If you ain't got electricity, if you don't have water and sewage, those three things that a society has to have.
You can't.
Then to go further on into industrialization, you got to be able to take your iron ore and turn it into steel, then take those steel basic shapes and into fabricated shapes for the other industries where it's needed.
But like you said, buddy, you said earlier in the show, you said some people just not going to want it. It's not going to happen.
People ain't going to make it. That's
the point. And that's reality. That is reality. But see, like, we're dreaming and scheming and letting you know what we think. How many people you think can say that? I have done that.
Well, one of the things that hurt blacks in America is their kids ain't educated, and they seem to be satisfied with it. See, the things that you see, the creator, LeBron James, Kobe Bryant, look at the thousands of kids that was wasted in order to create just those two.
That's right.
See, there's nothing wrong with athletics, but you got to have something to complement that.
I agree.
You can't have your kids all day long just for that. And then when they don't make that, what else is there for? They can't compete.
That's a
very, I think when it comes to sports, it's very limiting, too. I think more black folks should take a look at sports manufacturing. Instead of playing basketball or football,
own it.
What does it take to – well, not only own a team, but manufacture footballs, manufacture baseballs, manufacture basketballs, make the clothes. On a mass
the things that go on off the
on
court, they should be more involved in.
Now you're talking Amish right here. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But, the thing is, it's not sexy to them. And that's why that's not even being entertained.
Well, what's the good in being sexy and your ass is hungry?
Well, I agree. I'm just saying, you know, people like what's sexy and shiny and all that, and they're missing the whole boat.
Now, Lee, he's got the mental attitude, what I was talking about, mindset. what's the use of this if I can't, if it's not going to help me with that, okay? And then we don't, most of us don't think that way. And see, like he just said, and that's hindsight, I call it, what is this going to do for me or us, you know what I mean? But most people ain't looking at us or me. They looking at.
And I tell you something else. You got to stop supporting people who don't have the same values and interests that you do. That don't make no damn sense neither.
That's right. That's right.
Why are you going to vote for somebody and then they're going to enact policies that's going against your interests?
You know
what's
been
stupid
going on?
As hell.
But you know what's been going on since the beginning of time, what you just said. And you know what? It is true. It's the poor people support the people that they think going to get them out of poverty, and it never happens. Sometimes that never happens. It's
no, it don't happen.
It's a sales pitch. Okay.
Well,
but
gentlemen,
the point
look,
is,
it's 12:59, almost 1 o'clock here. We're overtime. So thank you both. Everybody have a good
all right.
Rest
nice
of
meeting you, Lee.
Albert,
yes,
we'll
nice
have you back
you.
Soon.
We'll talk. Okay, Lee.